Well, good morning. It is approaching 10:01 on Wednesday, the 28th of November, and you are tuned to WPRB Princeton, New Jersey. Community-supported independent radio at 103.3 FM or online around the world at www.wprb.com. Welcome to another edition of Classical Discoveries. I am your host, Marvin Rosen, and I'm with you for this program every Wednesday from 5:30 a.m. all the way until 1 p.m. And I want to thank you so much for joining me, and we continue now with music of Randy Wolf.
Thank you.
were just listening to Rag, one of the five dance etudes of Randy Wolf. The set of pieces was written in 1982 and 83 and just performed by pianist Kathleen Supovi. Well, we are honored in being joined by both musicians involved in that last piece, composer Randy Wolf and pianist Kathleen Supovi. Very briefly, Kathleen Supovi is one of America's most acclaimed and versatile contemporary music pianists, known for continually redefining what it means to be a pianist, keyboardist, performance artist in today's world. In addition to her compelling virtuosity, she is also known for her boundary-breaking ways of breaking the wall barrier or breaking the wall between performer and the audience. After winning top prizes in the Gaudeamus International Competition for Interpretation of Contemporary Music, she began her career as a guest artist at the prestigious Darmstadt Festival in Germany. Since that, Ms. Supovi has presented solo concerts entitled The Exploding Piano, in which she has championed the music of countless contemporary composers, minimalists, post-minimalists, and experimentalists. And she has appeared with the Lincoln Center Festival, the Philip Glass Ensemble, Bang on a Can Marathon, Music at the Anthology, Composers Collective Incorporated, etc., etc., etc. Randy Wolf, my second guest, studied composition privately with David Del Tredici and Joseph Maneri, and at Harvard, where he earned a Ph.D. He is a member of the Common Sense Composers Collective. He is the composer mentor for the Brooklyn Philharmonic. For the 2009-10 season, Wolf was the composer in residence for the Fulcrum Point New Music Project, sponsored by Meet the Composer. He works frequently with John Cale, notably on his score to American Psycho. His works have been performed by Kathleen Supovi, the Kronos Quartet, Jennifer Choi, Timothy Fain, Mary Rowan again, on and on and on and on. Well, first of all, I want to thank you both for coming. This is indeed a very special honor to have you both here.
Thanks. It's a great pleasure and a great honor to be here.
Well, thanks so much, Marvin. We really appreciate it.
It's great to have you here. And first of all, before we go further, I have to congratulate you both for the wonderful work you do. Because what you are doing is bridging our traditional concert audiences to today with younger people and unusual things, creative things, kinds of creativity which bridges our traditional repertoire with our young people who listen to all sorts of interesting stuff. So you're doing great work in terms of that, both of you as performer and composer. And it's great, and we're going to be exploring some of the things later on regarding that. For now, though, I think I want to mention that these guests are here together for a good reason. They are husband and wife. And I thought, well, let's begin, I guess, with a little, I guess if you want to call it warm, fuzzy, or human interest.
Okay.
How did you two meet?
We met through, I was living in Boston, and I had been kind of a hermit for a little while, but I'd gotten friendly with a guy named Jim Romeo at New England Conservatory, where I was teaching in the prep division.
Mm-hmm.
And he and I had, we'd started going out to lunch together and talking about starting a new music ensemble, and he was really one of the first friends I actually made in the Boston area.
Mm-hmm.
So we got friendly, and one night I was working late, and I came around the corner and I saw Jim, and hi Jim, how are you? And he's with a man and a woman. And I said, oh, are these two friends of yours? And just kind of very glibly said, and he said, no, actually this is my wife. And then the other person was Randy. And Randy had just moved to Boston, and it was his first day there. And he said, he's got a terrific, really long, hard piano piece, and he's looking for a pianist that might do it. So you guys should talk. And we got together, and I heard the piece, and I liked it, and I thought he was really had something interesting going on. And the rest is history.
That's what I was going to say. The rest is history. That is amazing. Now, how long have you been married now?
Well, we've been married 26 years, but together for 30.
That's okay. That's and I have to ask you, when is your anniversary?
June 22nd.
Okay, because I'm 26 also. And you've got about 3-4 months on us. But anyway,
but wow, congratulations.
Thanks, yes. But anyway, this is great. This is great. And music can bring people together.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think our relationship is based on a lot of things, but one of the things it's based on is having this love of something that's bigger than the both of us, and I think it inspires both of us in some way to respect each other beyond just being in love or being together and that sort of thing. But it's been great.
Wow, that's great. Well, Kathleen, let us talk to you a bit first. Okay. I see Randy now putting his chair back. Oh, now I'm off the hook for a little while. And that was his hands are folded. We'll get to you. Don't worry, Randy. You won't be left out. Well, Kathleen, let us go first.
Okay.
When did you get interested in music, and whom did you study with in your earlier years?
When I was a kid, we had a piano in our house. Mm-hmm. And, I think I started playing around on it. And my father was very into classical music when he was a kid growing up in New York. He used to go to, sit up in the peanut gallery and hear things. And I think he always wanted a daughter that would be a classical pianist. I don't think he quite pictured a daughter being how I am now, what I've ended up doing. But I don't think that was the picture he had in his mind. But he did. So I think there was a great deal of, she seems to like it. Let's give her lessons. Mm-hmm. So when I was a teenager, I'd studied for a few years with a piano. This was in Portland, Oregon. I went to a piano teacher when I was a teenager, and I was a little bit of a typical teenager. My interest was kind of plateauing a little bit, but I went to this teacher who was, she was kind of a real eccentric, kind of bohemian, like if I met her now, she'd be living in the West Village or something like that.
Yeah.
And she had a lot of really interesting objects in her studio, and she played kind of these light classics, sort of a lot of Gershwin, Slaughter on 10th Avenue, mm-hmm. stuff like that.
Yeah.
Things that were jazzy, things that were current, like in that part of the century, I guess.
Okay.
And she taught those to me. And I think sometimes to the exclusion of Bach and Beethoven, but I think not only did that hold my interest, I think I really credit her as being one of the major reasons that I became a professional pianist. And I got really interested in those, and they allowed my playing to really take off. I think it also planted a seed, a love of contemporary harmonies and that sort of thing in my head. And then I went to Pomona College for undergraduate, and there were some, there was this wonderful sort of resident genius named Carl Cohn, and just the whole school was very oriented toward contemporary music. It was the Los Angeles scene, and I remember hearing Schoenberg Opus 25 and freaking, and I thought, oh my God, that's so interesting. You could have like old dance forms and put new sounds, pour new sounds into them, and that was, so I sort of cite that. And then I went to Juilliard after that, which was very traditional. That was sort of like going back and getting what I had missed out on a little. But I, of course, realized that there were, 30 pianists playing the same Beethoven sonata and that sort of thing. And
yes, I've heard of that.
So I think it's very different now.
Yeah.
But I think at the time it was like the stereotype. And after Juilliard, I went and worked with a man named Russell Sherman.
Oh, sure.
He, not only is an amazing, amazing teacher, he also has a history of new music, so there was certainly that sense of him. Also, but I think I realized that if I wanted to be a professional, that what was the point of playing something old? I started doing music of peers of mine, and I thought, this is really great. You can create your own performing tradition on each piece you do. And
that is wonderful. And I've had guests that say basically the same thing. There's so much out there now, which and you can stand for something, I guess, is what it be.
Yeah.
Like when people think of new music using for piano, extended techniques live today and mm-hmm. is a major figure, they think of Kathleen Supovey because you stand for something.
Oh,
and
that's
I mean,
nice.
And I think that is very mm-hmm. important. Mm-hmm. Instead of, you know, like so many things, even you go shopping into stores, people stock the same stuff in so many cases.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, be different and stand mm-hmm. for something. And I think in the long run, you'll go along much more further.
That's good to know, because it doesn't always feel like that on the way. It's like you're like, wow, what if I were doing something more recognizable to people? You can ally yourself with it, and but it's worked out well, because a lot of people that I, you know, I'd ask them for a piece at some mm-hmm. point in early in their career, mm-hmm. and then I see they blossom as composers.
I agree, I hear that, and you know, and I want to talk to. He's getting too comfortable over there. But
yeah.
What I want to do is
yeah, Randy being one
but
of
what's
them.
What's very
certainly.
Very interesting. That's right, and you know, and what happens too is that when people play things that are not known, I have a real philosophy about this. It's lack of exposure. It isn't that they don't like it, or it's just we've mm-hmm. got to, it's this predictable element. I mean, if somebody, I know, like if I am presenting contemporary music in one of my classes, over a period of two periods, we'll hear the same piece of Stockhausen three or four times, a very short piece, then they start seeing they're comfortable with it. And I find mm-hmm. that it's just not that they don't like it, it's just that they're not comfortable with it because mm-hmm. of lack of exposure.
Yeah,
to it.
Yeah,
and
like hearing something you're familiar with, or a recognition.
That's right.
Yeah.
So anyway, but that's exciting, and Randy, your rest time is over.
Okay. I'm awake.
This is Randy Wolf. Kathleen's husband and composer. Oh, this is great. Let's talk to you about similar material. When did your interest in contemporary music begin?
I have a slightly different version of our first encounter, though, which is at the time.
Oh, okay.
I was 23 years old. I'd been living in Minnesota. I moved to Boston and was living in somebody's basement working as a custodian at a bar. And I had this 30-minute long piano piece that was my first non-student piece, my first piece since I left school. And it was just incredibly hard to play and incredibly different from most contemporary pieces, sort of like a surreal Beethoven collage, just to give you some idea. And nobody was interested in this. And I ran, first day in Boston, looked up my old friend Jim Romeo again, and I said, I have this impossible piano piece. Do you know anybody who might be interested? And he said, here she comes right now. And she came around the corner. And of course, Kathy's known for playing 30-minute impossible-to-play strange piano
pieces. I mean, Kathy, actually, if you haven't seen her, if you see her, you'll probably imagine like five hands on her, not just two.
Yeah. And two small ones, too.
Well, I mean, how do you get around that sometimes?
We have to move fast. Mostly that's it, because not only are my hands small, but as you can see, the radio audience can't see, but as you can see, my reach is not that huge either, so just have to move fast.
I mean, I heard the same similar issues with Alicia De La Rocha doing all that Spanish music, because she had small hands also.
Yeah, really small.
And there's got to be a secret to all that. But now, is this piece, what is the piece, Randy, you were talking
about? Well, the piece
about?
Is, I guess the expression is withdrawn. It was called HB.
HB?
I no longer circulate the piece, so Kathy has threatened to play it in public.
Okay.
Sometime in the near future.
I'm going to leave that alone. Well, Randy, how about you in contemporary music? When was your initial exposure?
Well, like a lot of classical composers mm-hmm. my age, I grew up playing rock and jazz and that sort of thing.
Sure.
It's strange because my parents went to the symphony. My father took me to hear Virgil Fox concerts. I heard The Rite of Spring, but it never really took hold with me until I went to college. And I went to Michigan State, and mm-hmm. I was thinking I'd be, you know, sort of rock/jazz musician. But we're in harmony class. We're talking about Beethoven string quartets so often. Maybe I'll get a record. They used to sell these large plastic discs called records that you could get symphonies and string quartets on.
Oh, what are those? No.
They're breakable and fragile. Yeah. And I heard, I'll never forget, Beethoven's Opus 59 1 string quartet.
Okay.
First of the Rossomovsky quartets. And it was really like a religious revelation. I'd never understood how classical music worked, or that any music could work this way. And there are many aspects to classical, but what got my attention in the Beethoven was form and the idea of expectation. And he would do things that seemed humorous to me, not sort of pratfall humorous or slapstick, but rather, I've led you to expect this, and I've led you to expect this. Mm-hmm. And then some very strange thing happens. I thought that was the most fascinating idea I'd ever encountered, and I just dropped everything. I didn't even listen to rock for years.
Wow.
Jazz, I just dropped it all because I had a lot of catching up to do. I didn't know any of this music. And the person who taught me was this Jim Romeo, who also is the one who introduced me to Kathy. He said, well, you know, there's 9 of these Beethoven symphonies and 41 of these Mozart symphonies, and I did a great deal of catching up and listening and things like that, and very interested in Stockhausen, who you mentioned, who was, and that whole crew.
Yeah.
I really wanted to be self-taught for some reason. I wound up leaving the music department at Michigan State and going to the English department and read a lot of James Joyce and William Blake and Holderlin, romantic poets.
Yeah.
And somehow the romantic poets idea took hold, and I thought, I'll move to Paris, where Joyce and a lot of, and Beckett and a lot of the writers I was interested in.
Okay,
but that was 100 years ago, and it was a different Paris, and I was a musician, which is a different thing. I was living in this tiny apartment in Paris teaching. Somehow I could survive teaching 6 piano lessons a week and teaching myself. Then I moved back to the United States with a woman that I was living with, where she was a professor at Carleton College.
Okay.
Lived with her for a year, and when that didn't work out, I moved to Boston and met Kathy. And
that did work out.
And almost as lucky as meeting Kathy, if you don't mind me saying, was meeting Joe Maneri, one of my two really main teachers. Joe, I don't know if you're familiar with him or his music, is a very fascinating, eccentric character. He's mostly known as a microtonal jazz improviser. And he only had a career success in his 70s.
Wow.
He sort of hid out at home. He taught at New England Conservatory. But he was an incredible teacher of the most traditional harmony and counterpoint. He studied with a member of Schoenberg's circle and really studied the Schoenberg book the way that Schoenberg taught it. It's about 3 years of many, many exercises. And that was the most fundamental thing for me.
This is great because, you know, now we're going to go, Randy, to a composition of yours. And I want to thank you for sending me these private recordings of your music that we can broadcast. This is Dream Manifold. And our performance is by pianist and my guest, Kathleen Supovi, and she is joined by Ethel, the string quartet known as Ethel. Tell us a bit about the work before we hear it.
It was commissioned in memory of a friend of mine, a mathematician, Norman Zachary, and that the title comes from a manifold as a concept in topology, which was the kind of math that Norman did, and combining that with the musical sense of fantasy and so forth, that a dream manifold is really more like it. That I'm very interested in science and math, but fortunately in music, that interest, you know, we don't have to do the hard part. We can just make up worlds and create things. We don't have to actually deal with nature or the realities of math. And writing for Ethel, they're all close personal friends. Ralph, the violist, actually, I knew from New England Conservatory with the Jim Romeo story again, since he's about 12 years old. So I think it's the only time writing a chamber piece that I didn't even think of the instruments. I just thought, well, I'll give this, you know, this is something Ralph plays, and this is something Dorothy plays, and this is something Kathy plays.
Yeah, so interesting. They were actually here. I had them here a few years ago, and they were great, and we did some live recordings in the other studio, and it was great. But we're going to listen now to Dream Manifold by my guest, Randy Wolf. Our pianist is Kathleen Supovi, and she is joined by Ethel.
Thank you.
Thank you. You were just listening to Dream Manifold by one of my guests, Randy Wolf, as performed by pianist Kathleen Supovi, along with the string quartet known as Essel. All I can say is that when listening to that music, again, you guys are just both doing such wonderful work in presenting music that is in the language, I guess, of younger people or people that don't necessarily listen to, quote, classical music. It's a wonderful bridge, I think, you know, a wonderful bridge, and a bridge that's totally different than crossover. You know, it's something much more rich and powerful.
Yeah, much more in the structure of the piece.
Of the piece,
yeah,
too. Yeah. So this is really great. Now, Kathy, or Kathleen, I should say, we're going to go back to you.
You can call me Kathy. I'm always Kathleen in print, or I like to be Kathleen in print. But, you know, it's one of those, like, weird, nervous things that I'm psycho about.
Oh, you know? Okay. Well, I mean, I don't want to get you, you know, I don't want to create any
problems. No, but when you're talking
problems,
to me, either one is okay.
Okay.
My dad used to call me Kathleen, except when he was mad at me, then I was Kathy. But
I would think it would be the other way around.
You would think so.
Wouldn't you? Yeah. I would think so. Well, Kathleen, you teach in the preparatory division of Manus College,
right.
I'd like to talk to you about what you teach your students. You do a tremendous amount of more avant-garde music that's a little more out there, however you want to say it. Do you share this music with your students at all, or other music of today? What do you, is there a link between what you do when you perform and what you do at Manus?
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, I do start, mostly I teach kids there, and they're pretty much beginners or intermediates, and I'm teaching, you know, some of the building blocks are traditional music in the beginning, but I think right away I start to show them, you know, interesting things that can be done at the piano. They love, they're very adventurous, and like as soon as you get inside the piano, you'll never get them out practically. You know, when you show them that you can pluck the strings and show them that maybe you could use a mallet from a mallet instrument inside, and they love that. So sort of expanding their idea of what playing the piano could mean is extremely effective. And sometimes they like the sound. Sometimes they can be very conservative. One of the things that I do to connect them with today's world is kind of what that teacher did, Alessa, did for me.
Yeah.
You know, they want to play, there's a beautiful, you know, there's stuff by Coldplay that's great. I mean, there's just stuff by actually all artists. I mean, a lot of those easy piano, they say easy piano at the music store. Those easy piano
are not that easy all the time.
They're not that easy, and they're really nice arrangements. And I think, you know, as we were talking about before the show with Randy, too, that in some ways those arrangements are very pianistic. They develop a lot of skills based on playing those pieces, maybe even more than playing some of those very elemental Mozart and Bach pieces, at least as much, I think. And you know, for example, I have a student right now that's playing, she's playing a Schumann piece, and then she's playing a Taylor Swift song, and she's also she's doing some Queen music.
Oh,
she's doing Bohemian Rhapsody, which is
a
very out song. You know, it's really amazing it ever became a hit. And it's so interesting. It's got the mood changes and everything in it. But I've seen something happen at the prep division of Manus. There was a kind of new regime that started. Yay, Kate Sheeran, by the way, who's now the director. A group of people are now running it who really grew up with no boundaries between classical and pop music and hip hop or whatever.
Right.
And she's one of them. She used to be the horn player in the group Alarm Will Sound. And and she's now running the prep. And it used to be that, you know, music like a song by Taylor Swift, you couldn't put it on a recital. I mean, maybe they could do it on the side, but, you know, it was really frowned on. But now, I remember one of the assistants in the office, Kate White, saying to me, it was so fun when I was writing up the program and doing the research on the bios and the birth dates and stuff to do a birth date for Taylor Swift, you know, instead of a birth date for somebody in 1700. And anyway, but so I guess I'm trying to keep their ears contemporary in some way. And, you know, maybe like they'll have one classical piece, one more kind of popular piece, you know, something, some mix like that.
And you know what's happening too is that you're teaching to students the love of music. It doesn't have to be, because I know if everything, I know with, when you have, and also what's happening related to that is that if you have students that are losing interest because they're just getting classical music, this is a way to keep their music. And down the road, what are we trying to teach? A love of music? Because let's face it, how many of these students are going to go to Carnegie Hall and be big name performers? I mean, you want to teach them love, something that they can sit, read music, pick up a song they've heard on the radio, and play it. This is what I think in the long run we are teaching, or at least I'd like to think so.
You know? Yeah, absolutely. And they, it's something in their ear and something they want to feel themselves playing and to learn what that means. I think now it's really profound for a student to learn that, okay, right now I can't play this. 3 weeks from now I will be able to play this. I think that's really hard for them, because they pick up an iPod or something like that. They can instantly figure out how to work it. And they certainly apply that kind of skill to video games and that sort of thing. Like, I can't figure out how to get to the next round. Let's do that. But we need to do that for music and keep doing that. And sort of there's something about the learning process that's really amazing for the mind. And
you know, and you know, in the teaching of the popular music too, is that I have a student that's doing a popular song, you know, Soul Sister, one of these things, which I happen to love, by the way. And I remember that this was a student that, you have students that play this music that are not, you know, they're losing interest. This spikes their interest. And also what this does, when they're practicing at school, if they have a free period, they'll have students, friends, oh my gosh, you can play that?
Good point.
That's cool. You know, this makes it accessible, and you'll get more people interested in what we're trying to do, get them interested in music.
Also, if I can chime in, to take issue with some of the terms, I mean, we were talking about a song like Yesterday. I think it must be something like 40 years old. How old does this song have to be? How many generations have to pass for it to be considered a classic? And I really, speaking as a trained classical composer, I don't think that a short Bourée by Bach is better than the most famous song by the Beatles. I mean,
I agree.
Some of these things are classics. If classic in general, I think, means something that lasts for generations. And Radiohead's music, I remember a few years ago, I heard that at Princeton, for the PhD exam in music, you were assigned a piece by Schubert and the complete works of Radiohead. Well, if they're teaching it at Princeton for a PhD in classical music, can't we teach it in a seven-year-old's piano lesson as also classical music?
That's right. And I think the term, too, the whole idea, I like the term of considering music classic versus talking about music as classical music, which to me is a musical period.
True.
And there are all sorts of, I've had in various other guests, I've talked about what's another term. The term that's come up is concert music versus classical music. You can, I mean, there are many ways, but the term classical music, for what we describe, all of this stuff, I personally don't like, and I don't know about you guys.
Right, and then concert music implies that you're only going to hear it live in a hall.
Yeah, I mean,
yeah,
you know,
not downloading it or something.
It's truly the most generic name anyone could come up with. Concert. I mean, I think most music is played in concert.
Yeah, that's true. Why don't we just call it music? You know, and I think all this labeling too has to do with you know, with marketing, and where do you, in other words, when you go to the computer, what do you classify this type of music as? That's where they'll file it.
Exactly. And funny, we were talking about this earlier about music of Philip Glass, about how that has been, in addition to all its other virtues, and how it's a great. It's great music for students if they're up to it. I mean, and I've had a couple students. I had a student who was 8 who did one of the Metamorphoses.
Oh, gosh, that's great.
Yeah, he could really, it was, I've taught it to some adults and they've had some trouble with it. You know, they get it eventually. But this kid really could. Yeah. It just somehow he got it immediately, and it was great. And that's kind of in their ear too. I mean, because it's in movies, it's in, you know, Philip Glass-like music is in commercials. And
there's another, you know, composer who I've gotten into the last couple of years that has been kind of like an inspiration for students, because it has elements of classical music and pop music, and I'm talking about Ludovico Einaudi.
Whose music I don't know very well, but he's
sadly not that well known here in America. But he's written, it's kind of like, sort of, if you want to imagine things, almost like the piano of Michael Nyman occasionally.
Yes, that's how.
But it's music.
It.
It's kind of like a mixture of minimalism, a Chopin nocturne, and pop all together, and it's really. Mm-hmm. In addition of just regular popular music, which I do and we do to keep our kids interesting, that's been a great find with a number of students. You know, when you have students that have the stuff you're teaching them on their iPod, you've gone somewhere.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
Anyway, Kathleen, let's go now to your solo concerts, The Exploding Piano.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk a bit about that. How did they begin, and what was the background of those?
Well, I somehow at some point when I started, you know, thinking about quote unquote marketing my concerts, which were going to be exclusively modern music, I thought, wouldn't it be great to have a name? And I had a friend that worked in advertising, and she came up with slogans. I mean, she was part of those think tanks that sit around tables and come up with cool names for things.
Yeah.
So I asked her, I said, you know, could you do a little thought about it, you know, some names? And she came up with about 200 of them, and Exploding Piano was one of them. And I thought it was a really neat name because the idea was to sort of explode one's concept of what a piano recital was. So it wasn't necessarily literally exploding, but an expressive explosion or something, or a theatrical or conceptual explosion. And I still think of it that way.
Mm. Now, do you have concerts every year for that?
Yeah. I have concerts about every month or something. I sort of call basically
my. So when do you
my
learn all this music? This is wild.
It's tricky. I mean, you know, I try to play things multiple times.
You sure?
But,
you have to do that.
No, but there's always something that has to be learned really quickly, and I spend a lot of time practicing. It's I'm not a pianist that anything comes easily to. Everything has to be thought out, worked out. I think the product ends up being good if you're willing to work like that. I think I sort of title my entire solo piano enterprise the Exploding Piano.
Wow. We're going to talk more about that when we talk about things coming up.
Okay.
Before we go now, we got to go to music now. And we're going to go to actually a rather major work. It's one of your incredible performances of what I consider, I have to say, to be one of the masterpieces of our time. I think it's a great work.
I'm really proud to have been the person that made that piece happen.
Yeah,
Carolyn made it happen, but I mean, I'm proud to have been at the creation.
Well, we're referring to The Same Sky by Carolyn Yarnell. Now, this work is from 2000 and is actually scored for piano solo, computer, and video. And I have to say, this is an example of you sounding like you have five hands going at once.
Mm-hmm. Well, when she first wrote the piece, it's for me and a computer playing a MIDI. It's playing actually a synthesizer, Yamaha SY-77. She at first had written all the parts for me, and I said, well, this is really great, but you would need 16 pianists or something like that to play this. And she said, oh, okay, well, I'll make a part that one person could play. And of course she made a part that was really, really, it's, you know, the part is 40 pages with almost no rest.
It does, and I mean, you got to walk in there. You got to warm up before you jump into that, I guess.
Warm up and never take anything for granted, and even the easy parts end up sometimes being the hardest parts, and then the hard parts are just really hard. And I think I was never, when I started it, I wasn't sure it could be done at tempo. But, you know, I thought, well, I'll give it a try anyway.
Well,
but anyway.
It definitely was. Tell us a little bit more about the work and the video and the relationship.
It was made when she was coming out of a very dark period of mm-hmm. her life. And she always wrote very grandiose pieces like this. And it was really great to see her doing it at the piano. But it really has a lot of sunshine and hope in it.
Mm-hmm.
And she kept saying to me, I want to have a video with it. And at the time, I was sort of into the idea of videos. And I thought, oh, but she keeps talking about this video and keeps talking. And then when it finally happened, I thought, oh, yeah, I really see. She mm-hmm. had this idea to show the video. It's actually, just to describe it for the radio listeners, it's a sky with clouds kind of go across it, and in the middle of the piece, when the piece gets kind of stormy, the clouds look a little stormy. And so it's basically, it's sort of a combination of static and moving. And it's inside the lid of the piano, At some point, someone made me a spandex cover to go over the lid of the piano so that the lid is white, you know, stark white,
mm-hmm.
and also a special pole that holds the piano lid almost straight up so that it's a video screen, and then you shine the video on the inside of the lid. And you know those harpsichords that have those scenes in them?
Absolutely, yes.
This is where she got the idea.
It's wonderful.
To do it. And it's a really great idea. And it's actually been taken up by other people I've worked with who have had video components to their pieces.
Right.
So now
right.
I sometimes end up running videos inside the lid of the piano for
it's
all
wonderful.
The pieces.
I mean, this is
but it especially works well on this one because it looks like, if you do it right, it looks like the inside of the piano lid is this moving sky, you know.
It's unbelievable, and we're going to hear this work now. By the way, any of you who have heard the promo for Classical Discoveries Goes Avant-Garde will recognize, because the music I used for that is the beginning of what we're going to hear now, The Same Sky by Carolyn Yarnell. My pianist, or our pianist, is my guest, Kathleen Supovi.